Can you imagine if they like taught this kind of STI awareness in high school? Like sex ed? Absolutely fucking useless. Did anyone learn anything in sexual education in PE? I did not learn anything. Also, it was all about heterosexual sex. There's nothing about homosexuality, bisexuality, queerness, anything across that board. Nada. It's literally like a man has a penis and a girl has a vagina and then they make love and babies. Like, that was pretty much the extent of my high school sexual education. Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Bisexual Biologist. My name is Riley, your host for the show, and this is a podcast where we talk queerness, nature, and everything in between. On today's episode, we're taking a look at our cute and cuddly friends, the drop bears, aka koalas. Not only are these little guys fighting for their lives against the unregulated logging of old growth eucalyptus forests, they are also battling against a nationwide epidemic of an infection from the bacteria known as chlamydia. Today, we'll touch on why they are so vulnerable and what is being done to help them. Whilst we're on this topic of chlamydia, we're also going to explore the stigma that surrounds STIs in human society today. So strap in as we save koalas from extinction and humans from shame around STIs. Hello, my lovelies, and welcome back to another episode. So we're going to start with a little few fun facts about a koala bear, as they are an Australian native animal, and I think it'd be really great to talk about them. So koalas, aka drop bears for tourism ads, or koala bears, are arboreal herbivorous marsupials. So that means basically, in layman's terms, they live in trees, they eat plants, and they have a pouch which their young live in when they give birth to them. So they are native to Australia, only found here nowhere else in the world. Their closest living relative are wombats, and they are found in coastal areas of the island's eastern and southern regions. So they inhabit Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria, and parts of South Australia. They are very easily recognizable by their cute body types. So they're little stout, tailless cuties. They have a large head with big, round, fluffy ears and a dark nose. They also are colored silver to gray and brown with bits of white throughout their fur. And they also have opposable thumbs. So that means, so we have thumbs here in the insides of your hands. They also have another set of thumbs on the outside. So they have dual thumbs on their hands, which is super handy for when they're climbing trees looking for a juicy eucalyptus leaf to munch on. So that's just like a little bit about koalas. They're really cute, really adorable. Everybody loves them. They're very popular in zoos. Tourists love to, you know, get a picture of the koala, take a photo with the koala Australia Zoo, you know, reckon I. But they also are quite vulnerable. Their international conservation status by the IUCN is currently listed as vulnerable. So that's in the threatened subcategory. And this is mainly due to unregulated logging of eucalyptus forests throughout Australia. So big habitat loss affects them, increase in urbanization, so more buildings being developed on land, which used to have koalas everywhere, as well as invasive species or pets such as dogs attacking and killing them is another reason why koala numbers are dwindling. And also their lack of protection against the disease chlamydiosis, which is caused by the bacteria Chlamydia pecorum and Chlamydia pneumonia. Now, this is a different strain of chlamydia that humans contract, but it is still within the same genus and it is still a sexually transmitted infection, and it has a lot more, I would say, harsher symptoms and effects compared to what we get. So a little bit more about koalas. So typically they inhabit open eucalyptus woodlands, as the leaves of these trees make up most of their diet. So eucalyptus leaves are actually toxic to most animals. Koalas have a specialized digestive system and gut microbiome, which allows them to break down the nutrients within. They are largely sedentary and sleep for up to 20 hours a day. They're social. The mothers bond to their dependent offspring. The males communicate communicate with bellows that intimidate other rivals and attract mates, and they like to mark their presence with secretions from their scent glands located on their chests. Like other marsupials, koalas give birth to young known as joeys at a very early stage of development. They then crawl into their mother's pouches, where they live for 6 to 7 months until they are fully weaned around 1 year old. They have few natural predators and parasites, but as I was saying, are threatened by pathogens such as Chlamydiaceae bacteria and also the koala retrovirus. Because of their distinctive appearance, koalas, along with kangaroos, emus, are recognized worldwide as symbols of Australia. Okay, so why are these cute little cuddly bears so drastically impacted by this infectious disease known as chlamydiosis? Well, it's because they have no natural protection to this disease. They live on an island and were isolated for millions of years, and it's thought to have been transferred to the koalas after exposure to feces of infected sheep and cattle. Now, we all know where those sheep and cattle came from. It would have been from European colonizers when they headed on over on their big boats with all their diseases and livestock and invaded Australia. So cute little koalas would have just been hanging in their trees, you know, living their best lives. Obviously, there would have been some sheep or cattle starting to be let free, wild, or farmed, I should say. And it probably would have bordered on some eucalyptus forest that would have been cut down. And koalas, probably curious little critters that they are, would have climbed down from their trees one day, stumbled upon this new smelling thing on the ground, and most likely either touched it, sniffed it, maybe they ate it. Who knows? They're a wild animal. They are known to eat other animals' feces, such as dogs. They eat their own shit, you know? And obviously the disease, chlamydia, was in there. And then once it gets into their system, if you have no natural protection, if you've never been exposed to this before, any bacteria, virus will take a foothold and not let go. And that's why they are so heavily impacted by this disease today, because it just runs rampant in their population. So what does it do to these poor little koalas? So it causes infertility, it causes blindness, fatigue, swollen eyes, as well as a wet bottom, which sounds absolutely horrible, because what happens is the walls of the bladder thicken so much that it becomes ineffective in both holding and expelling urine. So you basically have like a leaky bladder, which then just seeps down into your fur and your bottom, which they use a lot to sit on because they wedge themselves in forks of eucalyptus trees. They have a very rough, very callous ass. They sit on eucalyptus forks all day. So if their bladder is constantly leaking and not expelling urine properly, and it's just going to wet that and make it soft and open to cuts and scrapes, which then leads to more infections. So it's not a very fun experience for the poor little guys. It also can be ocular or urogenital in its infections. So they get it in their urinary tract. They also get it in their eyeballs. So you can get all this horrible swelling and bleeding and itching. And it's just not very nice. And it's quite tragic. So because they have no natural protection, it obviously, once it gets in a population, it spreads quite rapidly. So it is sexually transmitted infection. It can also be passed on to offspring. So if a female has contracted the chlamydia bacteria and she gives birth, her offspring will also be raised with the disease. So it's a lose-lose situation in the reproduction game, essentially. So higher expressions or numbers of the disease is found in areas of disturbed habitats, such as those close to urban environments, mining sites, who'd have fucking thought, or bushfire impacted zones. This is all due to koalas being forced closer together as resources are more limited and competitive. So I know koalas eat eucalyptus, but they don't eat every specific species of eucalyptus. And in like a ballpark of the, I think there's around like 500 species of eucalyptus trees, they eat roughly around 80 of them. So if their land, their home, their habitat is being destroyed and becoming smaller and smaller and smaller, if there's only like one edible tree in say like a 5 kilometer to 20 kilometer radius, all the koalas are going to be going there to have a koala party and eat and just chill, hang out. So that's just breeding grounds for transmission of the infection. So that's why it's really important in conservation isolation methods is to keep them isolated from other populations which do have the disease present. But that's quite hard because their habitat is getting smaller and smaller every single day because the Australian government loves to just log all our national forests for timber. Fucking awesome. It's unregulated and they don't give a fuck. So that's quite tragic and needs to be fixed. So that's why they are suffering, is because they're losing their home and they're getting closer and closer together. And this disease is just taking over because they have no natural defense against it. Treatment of koalas. Is there a silver lining? Well, they have a specialized adaptation that allows them to break down the toxic compounds found in eucalyptus leaves. So not many animals can eat eucalyptus because it is quite toxic. This is a problem though. So this is mainly aided by their large gut system that is home to a very specialized microbiome of healthy bacteria. Wish I had the same. So antibiotic treatments are tricky because even though they may kill off the chlamydia bacteria, which is what happens to humans if you contract chlamydia, you get a antibiotic script. Because the antibiotics kill off all bacteria, they also have the potential to destroy the important gut bacteria of the koalas, which then can lead to the koala dying because the toxins from the nutrients of the eucalyptus leaves that they eat are no longer able to be broken down or taken up. The toxins can't be broken down and the nutrients from the eucalyptus leaves also can't be taken up because their specialized microbiome in their gut has been fucking annihilated by the antibiotics. So, bit of a tricky one. It's like save the koala, but then also you may kill the koala because it can no longer eat its food. So these treatments would have to be done in rehabilitation centers where the koalas can be given like a food via like drip or nutrients kind of thing. If you go out in the wild and just, you know, give them a dosage of antibiotics, it most likely won't help them because they probably starve to death or die from toxic overload of eucalyptus poison. Bit of a pickle. We're in a bit of a pickle trying to save the koalas. There is a new vaccine trial for koalas underway. But again, the problem with this, it's very resource heavy and costly. And there isn't much funding going out to these little guys because we'd rather let mining corporations and oil corporations live tax-free in Australia. So, you know, that's my two cents and I could go on about it, but I won't. Another issue that they do face with trying to treat koalas is because of their specialized digestive system, it also neutralizes and breaks down medicines at a faster pace than it can be put into the body because of their super livers. So there's a lot going on in terms of trying to save the koalas and problems that arise. There are people out there doing work. There are lots of rehabilitation centers. So in summary of our koala experience that we've learned today, urbanization does pose a threat to koala populations. However, the animals can survive in urban areas given enough trees that they can feed off. The other reasons why they're listed as vulnerable is because of collisions with vehicles and attacks by domestic dogs. Cars and dogs kill about 4,000 koalas each year. To reduce those deaths, we're trying to look at exploring wildlife crossing options to get across the ridge. So injured koalas and koalas infected with chlamydia really badly are often taken to wildlife hospitals and rehabilitation centers. So they're the ones doing the works. In a 30-year retrospective study performed at the New South Wales Koala Rehabilitation Center, they found that trauma was the most frequent cause of admission, followed by symptoms of chlamydia infection. So it's number two in causing koala deaths. It's not nice. It's not good. There are people doing things out there to prevent it and to save them. But unfortunately, it's kind of like a double-edged sword with the only treatment available right now. So now that I've piqued your interest or lost your interest, who knows, in terms of koalas and chlamydia, we're going to do a little segue in this episode. So we're obviously talking about koalas first up, but now we're going to move into STIs in humans and the shame and stigma that surrounds them in our society. So, my girls, not just my girls, my boys. The she's, the they's, the gays, the hers, the... I don't know what I'm saying anymore. So, social stigma remains a barrier in testing and treatment of STIs to this day. So, we all have sex. It's a core and pleasurable component of the human experience. I can vouch for that. I think everyone can vouch for that. It's natural. It's normal. It's fun. You should be doing it. If you're not, why not? Get out there. Get slutty. Have some fun with it. But practice safe sex, all right? That's the reason of this episode. Safe sex. And if you catch or contract an STI, they're no different in terms of being a virus or bacterial infection that you may get, such as the common cold, the flu, or the sore throat, or a sore throat. It's how they're transmitted that causes stigma in society. Because sex is involved, because your genitals are involved, STIs are often viewed as dirty or slutty, or have an aspect of shame and ridicule associated with them when you get a diagnosis. This, in turn, often results in people avoiding regular testing, ignoring their symptoms, or even fearing some societal ostracization. So the only way to combat this is to talk about it more, make it normalized, and break down the stigma around it. Because look, if you're going to have sex and you're going to have unprotected sex, at some point you'll probably catch or contract an STI, I should say, and that should not mean you should isolate yourself or go into a shame spiral and not get tested or not get treatment or just like freak out. Don't do that. That's bad. So with regular testing, safe sex, and open and clear communication with your sexual partners, this is what is crucial to combating this shame. If someone judges you or is unable to have these kinds of conversations, then my advice is, Dal, drop that fucking bag in the water. Get rid of them. Move on. Not worth your time or your health. We're all adults here. We should all be okay with talking about them. If you're nervous about it or you've never really, you know, looked into STIs or they're still kind of foreign to you, educate yourself as well. You should really be on that. Like, you should know that you should go and get tested. That's like the best thing to do. Every 3 months, just regular testing. Doesn't matter if you haven't had sex. Doesn't matter if you'd fuck 3 people in 2 days. Go and get tested for your own well-being and for the community's well-being, for society's well-being, you know? So in my experience, I find testing is quite easy. In London, UK, I found it was very accessible and very easy. So testing there was covered by the NHS, which is the National Health Service, and as were treatments such as at-home test kits, which I think should be like a universal healthcare thing. Basically, it's just an attainable little kit that comes to you via the mail. You order it online, gets dropped off to you, has all your instructions in it, has your little sample kit. So you got your swabs for your booty and your mouth, you got your little pee cup. This one in the UK also did like a blood prick one for HIV and syphilis. So you could also get your blood samples done, which is also really helpful. It was like an all-in-one shop. You just do it, do your samples, and then you literally just put it in the box, seal it, take it to the nearest post box, post office. It's all paid for as well, like the postage. Drop it in. You get like text message updates or email updates. Within like 3 days, you've got your results. If it's a positive, then you just go into your nearest sexual health clinic, which they tell you which are the closest ones to you. And then you get your free treatments done for whatever you may have. And if you're all green, then you go and live your best life. Get out there and get slutty if you want to. And in like London, obviously it's a lot bigger city than where I live right now, but also I just found that there was abundance of sexual health clinics, especially like queer clinics as well. It was much more accommodating to go to them as well than booking in for a specific STI appointment with your GP. I know that here in Australia, there are some STI clinics, but they're not as abundant, I would say, as they should be. And also if you want to go get an STI testing, you have to go and book into the GP and pay for it. And then also you have to sit down. And if your GP is not someone that you're like comfortable with or you know well or that you go to regularly, you just like drop into medical centers. It can also have like a bit of nervousness or unwillingness to go. I don't know. Especially if you go to like an old GP, probably an old male GP, you know, they can just be so fucking, I don't know the word to explain it. You know, just judgy and like narrow-minded and just like, no, so you've been having sex, have you? Unprotected sex out of marriage. Ugh, get out, you know? I mean, not all GPs are like that, but there's some out there who are. Stay away from them. Okay, back on track because I'm rambling a bit. So the World Health Organization estimates that over 1 million new cases of STIs occur every day around the globe. So you're not alone if you've contracted an STI. 1 million other people have also done it every single day. So get off your high horse. It's nothing special about you. But you're not an outlier if you contract an STI. And the most common being chlamydia, gonorrhea, trichomoniasis, I'm probably not saying that right, and syphilis. These are all easily treatable with conventional medicines. And the sooner you get tested, the better it is, because leaving an infection go unchecked can result in more problematic health conditions down the line. So if you think that you might have contracted an STI, if you've got any type of symptoms at all, go and get tested. The sooner, the better. Okay. So where does all this shame around STIs come from in society? Well, there are multiple factors, being culture, religion, of course, family, and trauma. The shame sits in our bodies and is carried around like a burden, and shame prevents us from taking control of our sexual health. So if you're proactive and practice safe sex, you will greatly lower your chances of contracting an STI. But hey, we're not perfect, and when you're feeling hot and you're feeling heavy and you're in the moment, this can often be bypassed, and that may result in you contracting an STI if you or your partner are unaware that you currently have one, because sometimes symptoms cannot show up for 2 weeks after you are infected, you know, or sometimes you just may not have any symptoms at all. That's why I say get tested regularly, just in case. So if this happens, number one, don't play the blame game. Unless someone has blatantly lied to you about not having an STI when they knew they had one and they still continue to have unprotected sex with you, that's on them for being a poor sexual partner and also an asshole. Okay. That's the only reason where you can be like, you willingly had sex with me when you knew you had an STI and you didn't tell me or did get treated, low blow. Then you can blame them for catching it. Don't oust them in public, but make sure they know that they're a fucking asshole and they should go get tested and treated immediately and not do that to anyone else ever again. Okay. Back to the main part. So it's not your fault for contracting STI, but it is your responsibility to seek treatment and inform your most recent sexual partners that you have contracted one. That may be a little bit awkward, especially if it was a one-night stand or didn't end well, but there are anonymous text lines that you can send messages of a positive result to, so you can let the person know that they have been exposed to an STI and they should go get tested anonymously. If you have no idea who they are, you have no way to contact them, try your best to, you know, just try your best. So when it comes to STIs, basically, I believe you just got to be an adult about it. You're not a bad person, and seeking treatment as soon as possible is the best thing you can do for yourself and others. Now, in saying this, it is easier said than done, but healthcare professionals are there to help you. They've seen it all. They will be there to support you as well. I know I said something about GPs being arseholes, but that's not true. They are there to help you, and they took an oath to protect you. So they will give you medical advice and assistance. Just go. Just do it. Oh, side note, actually, the more ready available testing is, like, the more people will do it. I know for a fact that where I work, they have a STI self-testing kiosk in one of the bathrooms. So you go in this little like computer thing. You just like grab a sample bag from next to it, and it has like a code on it or whatever. And you punch in all your details and it then registers into the system. And then you go and do your samples. So your swabs and your pee cup. It's just for chlamydia and gonorrhea. So it's not like any blood tests or anything like that. Do your samples and you drop them in the sample box. And then same kind of thing. Text message lets you know they've been collected, and then you should get your results in like a week or so. Fantastic. Every bloody toilet should have one of these. I think it'd be fantastic for the world. Anyway, that's just another one of my little brain things. Okay, back to shame and STIs. So these conversations around STIs bring up generations of programming and shame, but understand that your healthcare providers have seen it all, and they are there not to judge you, but to help you. So isolating yourself only equals more shame, because then you just go into your shame spiral of like, oh my God, I contracted an STI. Like, how dare, like, what the fuck? What am I going to do? Like, all that nonsense. Don't do that. No. It's important to talk about it. It's important to bring it to the surface. If you contract an STI, if you feel okay with it, tell your friends. Be like, I'm going to the doctor because I got an STI. No, don't do that. But isolating only equals more shame. And that's why it's important to talk about STIs and the stigma around them like I am now, because they are normal and we should normalize that they happen. And there's no point in locking yourself away and feeling like a pile of shit because you contracted one. I know it might be scary for the first time and you might get triggered by that whole yuck, I got an STI, like, how gross. Don't think like that. That happened. I can go and get tested and I can go and get treated, and my life will continue on like it always has. There's nothing else about it. But if you are consistently contracting STIs, I would perhaps recommend changing up your safe sex routine by making it safe. Maybe don't sleep with someone who you've gotten an STI from multiple times. And if you're hoeing it up, then use condoms or protection all the time, I would say. That's just my two cents. Like, you don't have to, but you don't want to contract STIs. You want to avoid them. Sometimes it's unavoidable, but the moral of this story is safe sex will keep you safe.
Abstinence is the only way. Follow your Christian values and just don't have sex ever.
The more we talk about these topics, the less dramatic they can seem, resulting in less guilt and better awareness. Because the more we have these discussions, they cause ripple effects in society. So if you're open about talking about STIs, you may inspire someone who was previously afraid to then talk about them and educate other people or help other people get tested or give them resources on where to go or what to do when you contract an STI. The next part that I want to talk about is from an article called Intermina. And I thought the information on there was very insightful and quite nice. So I'm going to just like talk about it a little bit. So being vulnerable creates a space for deep emotional healing. The more often you do this, the more comfortable you become and easier it is to have these conversations, even with new sexual partners or one night stands. Another core component to this conversation is the language that we use around STIs. So medically, yes, you are infected and that can carry weight, because that can imply that someone is sick or diseased or someone to avoid. So perhaps try what I've been using throughout is contracted, or just saying that you have an STI. Don't beat around the bush. Be direct, be clear, own it. Own chlamydia. In a sense of not letting it have power over you, I should say. It's just a virus or a bacteria at the end of the day. We live, we learn, we move on, we become more aware. We grow as a society. Another term thrown around is clean, and this can also imply that if you get a positive test result, that the results means that you are dirty. And implying that someone is dirty is to avoid or to not touch them, which is ridiculous given the widespread rate of people who contract STIs globally every single day. So by changing the language you use around sexual health, you can be more empathetic and sensitive to peers, friends, or even a colleague who may have an STI that you don't know about. Be careful and mindful of what you say and how you say it. Refrain from judgment and instead make a safe space where it can be openly discussed. Educate yourself on how to go about getting treatments and where to get treatments. And don't let an STI diagnosis define you. Thank you for listening in to today's episode. As always, nature is gay, so do not hide your DNA. See you next time.